out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 30th of January. Tuesday, the 30th of January. I'm still stuck on Monday because I pre-recorded Monday's show on Sunday. But as it's Tuesday, we have Nat Danelaw with us today. And of course, you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Nat, how are you doing today after I messed up the intro?
I'm doing fairly well. Thank you for once again for having me on your internet podcast program on the internet.
Well, you are most welcome, and so far you've come up with some fantastic subjects for us to cover, and they've also got a lot of positive comments as well. I keep getting people coming across people saying, oh, it's great that you've got Nat Danelaw on there. Benjamin Raymond I was talking to the other day, and he said how pleased he was to hear you back on the radio again, and I know you've got go on.
I wish that you would that he would go on Radio Arian and have his own show on this radio station called Benjamin Radio Benjamin, the Benjamin Show.
Yeah, that would be good. It's just a question of getting hold of him. He's a hard man to get hold of. He's very, very busy. We've had him on before, and I'm sure we will have him on again. But today's subject, I think, is particularly interesting. Talking about the benefits of solitude and the way that the Western man has been oppressed. So maybe you'd like to enlarge upon that to start with now.
I will gladly, but I will explain a bit of context. Now, when you look, we live in the 21st century. Men everywhere looks miserable. The urbanite is very indifferent towards everything he sees. You can go into a major city with a population above 1 million, and you can walk around, and you will notice that there's so many people, but yet at the same time, you don't really get to reflect yourself in anyone around you. As a matter of fact, you can be in the most populated place in the world, yet at the same time feel very, very, very alone. Now, what I'm trying to get at is that just like it was done with that rat experiment, what was it called? I don't remember it, but it was essentially an experiment where they took 10 mice to begin with, and they inserted them into a safe environment where they would be fed every day. There was no natural enemies, no predators, no disease. All the food they could eat and all the sleeping space they could have. There was enough room for at least 10,000 nesting mice in this little experiment, this little mice universe that was made for them. You know, there was a population boom until they reached the mass, the critical mass of 3,000. When they reached the mass of 3,000, weird tendencies started to appear within the mice population. They started fighting more. The males became introverted. As a matter of fact, they spent most of their time grooming themselves rather than, mating. Older mice developed very, very antisocial behavior. And as this came to be, within a few years, the population fell down again, drastically. I think we see the same with people. People, when they are in these enclosed places with all these people, domesticated, living in cubicles, everything square and too organized, man tends to become very disillusioned and depressed. And people don't know why. People spend thousands upon thousands of dollars and whatever valuta they have in their pockets to get a feeling of self again. They're all walking around in a midlife crisis and not knowing what is actually going on. I constantly read relationship posts about people who are very distressed about the situation, and people time and time again write, I want to go soul searching, and they go 3 months to another city to quote unquote soul search. The problem is, fundamentally, that soul searching, finding your ground, clearing out your head, or in other words, sorting out your shit, is never an external affair. It's all internal. I have spent time in big cities. When you walk around in them, you feel claustrophobic. You can't actually think clearly. The air, it pollutes your mind. But when you get out and you seek the solitude of the outside, a small town, even living on the countryside, or spending a week in a forest can severely clear your mind. Turn off your phone. Make sure you don't have power on it, whatever is needed. Going out there with only your thoughts, maybe bring a pen and paper, and clearly stand to yourself in solitude in the forest, just a place where there's not that many people. One will notice after you return back to where you came from that you have another perspective on things. You've actually found yourself. You've not been blinded by the constant need for gratification from other people. Instant gratification is one of the biggest disturbers in terms of finding yourself. Now, in history, especially in Western mythos, you constantly hear about the broken man, the wimp, whatever. Even men who are about to turn into men, boys turning into men, would go on these travels alone as a test trial of manhood, go out on a lone path and return as a man or a savior. Julius Evola as well did the same. Julius Evola at some point, I think it was during the end of the war, he actually went out on a walk alone into an Italian city getting bombed by Allied forces. Needless to say, he did get hit, but he went out of that walk alone. You see, Westerners are not supposed to be constantly seeking, instantaneous gratification. We are not made for that. The true meaning of actually gratifying yourself and feeling a settled sense of self-worth is what you find in extreme solitude. Nothing that could increase your dopamine levels whatsoever in terms of technology or whatever should be brought with you. It's a matter of finding yourself, not helping others, or in this case, having others help you find yourself.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time, people are just trying to escape from themselves. If they'll go off somewhere, they'll say, "Oh, I really need to get away. I'm going to spend lots of money on going on a holiday." And what they're really trying to do is just get away from themselves, because people have become really not very nice people, and they don't like to spend time on their own because there's nobody else there to take their minds off of themselves. And when you do spend time on your own, as you were saying there in the forest, and you have to face up to yourself and you have to do a lot of soul searching and you have to look at your behavior and you become very, very critical. And people don't want to do that. They want to escape from that. They want the escapism. They want to be going out, getting drunk, partying and forgetting about all the things that they've done. Because if you do spend time on your own, then you will become very, very critical of yourself. I know people that have gone to prison and have been put in solitary confinement, and it's actually been a very positive thing for them, being in the solitary confinement. And obviously that's a place that is really not conducive to anything positive happening is in a prison. But if you're doing it outside in the forest where you've got nature all around you, then it's going to be so much better for you. But what I'm saying is even when it's involuntary, when somebody else is putting you in solitary confinement, it can still have a positive effect. But when we're living in our boxes, we're completely cut off from nature. This is why we like to go camping so much, why we like to go to the music festivals, why we like to have picnics, is because we have to be out there in nature. And living one on top of the other in these blocks of flats, I don't know how anybody could do that. That is so unnatural. That really is, you're not even got your feet on the ground. You're raised up in the air. You're having to walk up all these stairs with people underneath you, insulated with your double glazing and your soundproofing where you can't hear the sound of the birds. And the people that you meet when you are in a rural area, you will meet really decent people who will talk to you. They'll be courteous. And when you're in a city, you meet people that just They don't want to have eye contact with you. And to me, they seem to be emotionally stunted. It seems to stunt the growth emotionally of people that live in cities because they cannot let their guard down ever. And they cannot, and even though they're surrounded by people all the time, they cannot actually build any proper relationships with them because they don't get any time on their own, properly on their own in nature. And some of the ideas that come to me after hearing you bring all that up, Nat.
Well, it's interesting you mention it, the urbanite, and you're completely correct. The urbanite lives in a existence of constant gratification, lots of hedonism. In the end, they are not able to actually form any sort of lasting relationships whatsoever. As a matter of fact, they try and avoid looking themselves in the mirror. Solitude forces you to look into the mirror. You start to notice imperfections. It's very uncomfortable. It's not nice to look at, but at some point you come to terms with it, and you will know how to correct whatever you're doing incorrectly. So, but here's another thing. This escapism from personal, what can you call it, like, from facing consequences of your own shitty life choices and a lack of adherence to duty, you kind of see something interesting happening. Well, let's look at the white population. The white man is inherently not designed for this sort of living. This hyper-materialized, drone-like society where everyone is trying to avoid eye contact with everyone. It's very maddening if you think about it. There's no higher purpose to anything you do other than to make your X amount of money every month. There's no end goal to it. As a matter of fact, end goals or higher ideals are highly discouraged. And while that is going on, you kind of see a nation building its own funeral pyre. You see how your tribe is self-flagellating. You see the blood of your ancestors being spilled for no good reason whatsoever. It's infuriating to see everything that was spilled for you being taken away, slowly getting forced into a corner. You don't have time to think, constantly being bombarded with new impulses, new imprints of filth. At some point, as a wolf, the white man strikes back. It's a very sad state of affairs that the white man is forced into his corner. But be that as it is, one man has to gather his mind. I cannot address how important it is that a man gathers his mind, focuses, gathers his focus, and actually evaluates why everything is miserable. Why is it that everything is garbage? Now, with that being addressed, man must also understand inherently what battles are worth fighting and what battles are not worth fighting. Now, this comes with a deep tactical evaluation of his surroundings, of what creates this toxic culture we live within, what creates the toxicity of man. So, when a man is to do anything, if he wants to correct, he must correct himself. That's natural. It makes sense. However, he must also evaluate. If he is to do any action, one, what is the purpose of this action? And two, what will be the outcome of this action? And maybe even three, what would be the consequence of this action? If the consequence is vastly negative to the outcome or desired outcome of the action, reevaluate. And I say this again, reevaluate.
Well, this is a problem, isn't it? We get pushed into a corner. We're living so materialistically. We're so cut off from nature, and people see everything that's going on around them, and they just snap, and they just attack somebody out of the absolute fury because they're so furious at what's going on, and then that's it. They're sent to prison, and we all look bad because it gets discovered that they're a nationalist, and it's not good for them and it's not good for us, and they haven't achieved anything. And what they really should have been doing is working on themselves. It's only ourselves that we can really we can really affect, and we cannot change the government. We cannot just go out there and change the government. But what we cannot go out there and change policies. We cannot just go out there and kill all the immigrants. All we can really do is work on ourselves and improve ourselves, and by improving ourselves, set a good example for the people around us. And the one of the ways to do that is to cut yourself off from all of this, and then you really realize just how much worth your life has. I mean, these people that go out and shoot people like Dylann Roof, I really don't think he realized how much value his life actually had. Maybe if he'd spent some time in solitude, he would have realized just what a wonderful thing life is, and how amazing it is that he's white, and thought about all the ancestors that he had, and every single one of those was white. Every single one of them chose correctly and didn't interbreed with another race. And he was the end product. The end product of hundreds and hundreds of generations of white people, each one trying to improve on the last. And when you really start thinking about these things when you're on your own and you're in solitude, you realize just how much you're worth. And then you don't want to throw everything away, and you become a good influence on the people around you, and you have patience. And when you see these things that are the sort of things that are going to push somebody to act rashly, like seeing a white woman with a good looking white woman with a Negro, you just have the patience not to lash out. That's what teaches you that patience and that self-control. I think it is solitude and thinking about these things. And not rushing around all the time and just moving from one hit to the next, one rush to the next, one dopamine rush to the next. You just got to cut all that out. And sometimes even just live on basic foods as well. That can help. And cutting back on drinking and not having these luxuries. And then when you do have the luxuries, you really appreciate them for what they are. Otherwise, you just become deadened to them, deadened to sensation. That's another thing that the modern world tries to do to us with all the porn and the drugs, and you become deadened to things, numb to the world around us.
Precisely. And actually, I think you really brought forth a brilliant point regarding the dopamine rush, because I think a lot of these men who lash out aggressively, I understand it's an act of desperation. However, I also see it as a byproduct of the constant instant gratification need we have in our civilization. These men acting so irrationally, so, what could you call it, boldly, to do a very self-destructive act. And they forget to ask themselves the three questions. And ultimately, they forget the fourth question, which is, how will this aid the 14 words? Because ultimately, what they do is not going to change the system. As a matter of fact, it's only going to make the system crack down harder on us. Some people will say that will lead to acceleration. Now, I don't believe in the theory of acceleration, that it will get bad enough at some point. They said that all the time back in the 80s and the 90s. Now, we're in the year of our Lord 2018, and, well, it's pretty bad now. I mean, at this very moment, our governments are providing young children with hormones, like artificial hormones, to alter their gender and hormonal growth and alter the clear image of God. So be that as this, it's even if you do something horribly irrational and the government cracks down on us and make things more just rebellion, as they would say, it's not going to alter anything. Liberalism. Liberal society we live in is like a slowly sinking ship, as Harold Covington said it at some point. That, you know, it sinks. The ship is clearly sinking. However, it sinks at a rate or a pace that is just comfortable enough. Give it 2 years with a new alteration in society, and people will come to terms with it. I remember back in 2015 when the first Islamic attack started occurring in Europe. In 2016, they put up those giant concrete blocks around towns, and people were very annoyed. But now, people are okay with it. People are likewise okay with that at this very moment in France. They're in a state of martial law, as in there's literal military men walking around with rifles outside. You're not allowed to have demonstrations, but people are okay with it. People are okay with it. So, with that being said, before anyone gets this weird need for instant gratification, getting their revenge pornography out in this world and killing a few heaps or judge or, God forbid, attack something completely unrelated to the cause, one must think, it's maybe, just maybe, they need to find themselves and find their inner peace.
Well, that's what it's all about. You need this. That's what being a man is all about, is being able to keep yourself calm while everything else is going wild around you. You need to be the center of the whirlwind, the eye of the storm, and keep yourself calm and even emotionless at times, so that you can really read a situation and get to the heart of it and understand exactly what's really going on, so you can find a solution. There's always a solution there. Whatever comes across us in our lives, I find there is always a solution somewhere. It's just a question of finding it. And sometimes you can have the most terrible things happen to you, but Providence will find some way, will present some way to you so that you can turn that situation into something positive. That's what Providence is. Adolf Hitler was really good at reading Providence and seeing what Providence was telling him. He spoke about this a lot. And sometimes you'll get a choice of two paths, and one of those paths will be really difficult, and it will be a really hard path to take, but that's the one you should be taking. And once you start setting foot on that path, you'll find that everything else seems to go along with it, and it helps you, and the rest of the world will help you. People you've never met before will come along and help you. If you're on the right path, and if you put your foot on the wrong path, then things keep getting worse and worse, and until you can end up in situations where everything has just fallen on top of you, and you can really can't see any way out. But there always is a way out, and you don't have to snap and kill people or massacre people or do something ridiculous that is going to get you locked up. And it's a question of looking at everything that you do and trying to make the right choice and trying to see the signs that are there. You know, I believe in God. I believe in Providence, which is the way that God teaches us in this world. And Providence will try to help you. Will try to help you make the right path, and will try to show you the signs to the right path to take. And, you know, I mean, this radio station, that's one of them. Everything that I do here, you know, about 10 years ago, I decided that my life had taken a wrong turn, and I'd been doing all the wrong things. And, you know, and I thought, well, how can I unpick everything and get back to where I was? But eventually I did. And now I feel that I'm on the right path, and I'm doing the right thing with nationalism. But, you know, it can take really awful things to happen to people. They have to get right to the bottom of the barrel and spend a lot of time in solitude. That, you know, that is so important to spend time on your own and realize just who you are. I mean, I really wasn't myself until I discovered nationalism. And now I know that I am the real me. I don't know if this is all making sense now, but I feel it is all linked together. With
it makes perfectly good sense. Makes perfectly good sense. And go on.
Well, that's it. You know, I mean, once you get right to the bottom of whatever it is that you are doing, they say the alcoholics need to get to the bottom of the barrel before they finally see the light. But when bad things happen to you, there's always a reason behind it. You know, bad things happen in the world, but everything does work towards the greater good. Now, I don't really want to start going into biblical examples, but there are plenty of biblical examples of terrible things happening and people making positive things out of them. And I think William Fink, 10 years in prison the man was given, and he spent that time translating the New Testament. He learned how to read Koine Greek and translated it, and now he's got the Christogenia website. Sometimes bad things happen to us. And what we've just got to do is look at them and isolate exactly what's going on and see what we can do to turn it into something positive. And that's what the white man does. You know, we act on what God gives us, and we try to do the right thing. And if it is the right thing, then it's, you know, it's in tune with God, because we are his tools on this earth. God doesn't do magical things. He uses man to achieve his will on earth. And we are his people. And you know that we are here to execute God's will on earth. It's not about being a servant or being a slave. Because if your creator created you, what he wants you to do is going to be what is the best thing for you to be doing. That's what I believe.
Well, I definitely see your point, and I think you're really making a sharp observation on this whole thing. Hardships has often been said to be, you know, the splitting roads of what separates the man from the, you know, the lamb from the from the men. And I find that in examples throughout, you know, lots of like life examples, you know, that it's in the hardships that you truly find yourself. And if you mix that together with some solitude, I think you're on a good path, essentially. It's often been said that, you know, when you pressure yourself a lot, you break yourself down, but you build yourself up. You deconstruct yourself for the purpose of reconstruction. And I think you're right about getting to the bottom of the barrel. However, I think a lot of people forget to look up from the barrel. Unfortunately, people are too focused on, you know, not feeling discomfort. So I think a lot of problems, and now I'm especially referring to a big proportion of the quote-unquote right wing, that would really help from reevaluating why they're actually involved in the struggle, whether or not they're compensating for a lack of personal success, or if they are truly understanding and truly feel with the bottom of their heart that they are involved in the struggle for the right reasons.
Well, if you achieve things and you know that you've done things, you don't need to be proving things to other people. It's yourself is who you really have to prove things to. That's why it's no good cheating, because if you're cheating, you've lost. Because you're only
except
playing
it's taxes.
Yourself.
You can, it's okay to cheat in taxes, though.
Definitely, yeah. Well, obviously, there's exceptions to the rule. There's always exceptions to the rule. But hardships are good. I mean, look at Adolf Hitler's book, My Struggle, Mein Kampf. Hardships are good. And we're never tested more than we can actually withstand. And there are always people that are worse off than us. These are things that I think about when I'm being sorely tested. And I also always know that, you know, whatever happens, you know, you're still alive. That's what really matters. I mean, you could think the whole world is absolutely terrible. It's all falling apart. You've got nothing. But the fact is, you're still alive. You're still breathing. You're still, and no matter what people can do to you on the outside, they can't get you on the inside. You know, they can't get right inside the real you. And then the world just looks like an illusion then. It's illusory. It doesn't matter what they can do to you. You know, you've still got yourself. You've still got your faith. You've still got your race there. Still got your people there. That's what keeps me going.
Yeah. And let me just bring in a quick quote from Nietzsche. He wrote, "What doesn't kill you makes you stronger." And I think there is something true to that. Discomfort often brings great benefits. If you go through a lot of discomfort, you will naturally face a large amount of good benefits. I think a lot of our people are used to the constant instant, you know, the constant gratification, constant satisfaction of whatever they might want, and this severe amount of self entitlement. But I think as soon as people get over that, it's going to take a few months for the normal man to actually get over that feeling of, oh, I have to wake up at 6 a.m. Oh, I have to take cold showers. If they get over that, they're really going to start feeling the benefits. You're going to feel sharper in the mind. They're not going to feel like a spaghetti-spined maggot walking around in clothes.
You have to challenge yourself. You have to do the very, very best you can. Whatever it is that you're doing, don't try to get out of it. You're not going to get any fulfillment of trying to get out of things. But if you try to do them the very best you can and take pride in them, then you're going to feel really good about what you do. And eventually you'll be the best at what it is that you're doing. But there's no good running away from things and hiding from things. Just to always do whatever you can to the best of your ability. You know, that's part of being a man, part of being a white man. We are able to do the most amazing things that the other races are just not capable of doing. We have to work.
Can I throw out a quick challenge to the fine audience of Radio Aryan?
Certainly.
It is the I'm not a nigger challenge. The I'm not a nigger challenge is built upon one fundamental. Try and take cold showers for a month. Try it. If you fail to do so, you're a nigger. But trust me, you will enjoy taking cold showers. I guarantee it.
All right, dude, can do you amazing good. I used to swim every day of the year when I was a young lad. I think between the ages of 12 and 13, something like that. I swam in the sea every single day of the year. And you see these Russians plunging themselves into the icy cold water. Even Putin doing that on New
Speaking
Year's
of which, like it was, I think it was the Olympics team of the Soviet Union. Before they actually went out to do any, you know, contests, et cetera, even before training, the athletes would normally take very, very cold showers. Now, it was rumored that this would increase the functionality of the male body, i.e. increase testosterone levels. With that being said, there has actually been made experiments on rats where they put rats into different temperatures. And it appeared that if you put rats into a temperature of approximately 32 degrees Celsius, their testosterone levels fall with 17%. However, if you put them into cold environments, at least within, you know, a lot colder than room temperature, it actually seems to increase the testosterone marginally by 21%.
Well, I expect it would do, because testosterone governs the temperature regulation. So if you're challenging yourself with a cold, then yeah, it is logical that would increase the testosterone. Anyway, we've reached the end of the podcast. I think it's been particularly interesting today. Probably could have gone on for longer, but we have got time limits. So thank you very much for coming on today, Nat. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back here tomorrow with Billy Roper. So until then, I'll say God bless and hail victory.